It's Sunday morning. Time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. And let me be the first to say to you, Happy June. Wow, we made it. One of the great months of the year. We have, in my view, we now have four great months ahead of us as we roll through into one of the reasons that the Midwest is such a great place to live, that time of the year. So, believe it or not, I was in Washington this week for a few days, and every time I go to Washington, I come back very happy to come back to the wonderful Midwest, Midwestern values, and the outdoors. Of course, downtown Chicago, we got the lake, but we don't have great outdoors other than that. So, what happened in Washington this week? Well, let me tell you, there was an announcement from the USDA, the Department of Agriculture, that caught everyone's attention on Thursday afternoon, and it's a subject matter that we talked about last week and have been talking about more of in recent weeks, and that is what's going on with forest fires. The USDA announced it plans to invest $200 million to expand timber production, strengthen rural economies, and secure American industries. I am not going to be cynical. I'll simply say $200 million to try to undo something that's taken 75 years to create is a start. Congratulations. Let's hope that they keep going. According to the experts that I've met with in Washington and elsewhere, we've got over 20 years of aggressive fire management, healthy forest works to do before we can get control of these horrific wildfires that are increasingly covering the continent, emanating out of Canada in particular, where, again, this year, it looks like things are very dry, and we saw the consequences of that last year and the year before with forest fires that blew, of course, they blew the air to terrible qualities in Chicago, Milwaukee, Minneapolis, New York City, Washington, D.C., and across the West. So the Secretary of Agriculture, Brooke Rollins, who's from Texas, announced a quote-unquote bold $200 million investment to implement the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Forest Active Management Strategy. It's the first step in decades that the Forest Service has undertaken to try to get control of dead and dying timber, rotting timber, diseased timber. So it is it's a step in the right direction, and we should applaud. And I do think it's the beginning of much more to come. The issue here is that what will the radical environmental groups do to try to stop this? One of the things that the Trump administration and agriculture is committed to do, whether you like them or not, I think you're going to like the fact that they are trying to cut the red tape out of regulations, rolling back burdensome regulations, and I'm quoting here, unleashing the potential of America's abundant natural resources. And that's really true. The Forest Service is so hamstrung with regulations and controls on how they manage their forests, that even the announcement that the Forest Service is going to finally come after the beginning of the backlog of a serious mismanagement and lack of management issues does not mean the Forest Service is not going to be sued by the usual covey of organizations that rally around, send you letters, emails, asking for money and telling you to stop the Forest Service from cutting down all our trees. It's preposterous to think that the Forest Service is interested in cutting down all of our trees. It's very real for the first time in decades that the Forest Service is interested in cutting down diseased and sick trees and dead trees and clearing out the underbrush to try to stop fires. And as the Rough Grouse Society will tell you, to open up areas so that grouse and woodcock can thrive. So that's all I'm going to say about it today. It's a big story that's developing, and I think it is one that hopefully we're going to see a lot more than $200 million being thrown at it, although that's a big start. But it's going to be years and years, as we've been talking about recently. Let me go to a horrific headline. And the headline simply reads, a flesh-eating parasite is advancing towards the U.S. It's called the screwworm. And if you don't remember what has happened previously, it's because it was a long time ago. After decades of campaigns to beat down the parasite out of the United States, out of Mexico, all the way down to Panama, it appears that suddenly the screw worm is advancing northward quickly. For 70 years, the United States has been fighting really a continuous aerial battle against the New World screwworm, as it's called. I better not use that word too many times. A parasite, and this is what it does, that eats animals alive, cows, pigs, deer, dogs, and even humans. I can't pronounce its scientific name, but it translates into man-eater. Larvae of the parasitic fly, this is what happens. It particularly happens with cattle. They chew through the flesh wherever there's a nick or a scar or an open wound, and they chew through and they begin to eat the animal from the inside out. This was a huge problem in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s in the United States. Most of us were not aware of it. The United States Department of Agriculture in the 1950s laid the groundwork for what they called a continent-wide assault to get rid of the screwworms. And we raised screwworms in factories. We blasted them with radiation until they were sterile, and then we dropped the adult screwworms by the millions, actually by the hundreds of millions, every week over the United States. The idea was to have sterile screwworms outcompete real screwworms and therefore knock the population down. And believe it or not, it worked. We drove the screwworms south. We drove them into Mexico. And then we worked with Mexico to drive them south out of Mexico and out of the rest of North America. And by the early 2000s, the screwworms had been obliterated from the North American continent. And they were all the way down to Panama at what is now known, of course, as the famous Darien Gap, which has been where so many of the issues of immigration in the United States from Venezuela and elsewhere has been coming through. So we got rid of them, and deer thrived and cattle thrived. And all of a sudden now, beginning in 2022, the Darien Gap, quote unquote, barrier was breached with screwworms. And in the case of cattle, it's skyrocketed from just a few cattle a year being diagnosed in southern Mexico to over 1,000 cattle. And this while they were still trying to eradicate the flies. They now have begun moving northward at the most rapid rate that's ever been seen. They've gone 1,600 miles through 8 countries, where they're now in the northern Mexico with only 700 miles left to go to the Texas border. And the general commentary from the USDA is, we are not prepared. One of the things you learn when you're in Washington, we are not prepared for this reemergence of the screwworm because we thought we had eradicated it. And now all of a sudden it is right back on us. So there'll be much more on this in the coming weeks. But the key is that somehow, and they believed it was through smuggling, as the cattle prices increased, the smuggling of cattle through southern Mexico increased through the cartels into northern Mexico. And as the cattle moved north 1,600 miles, the screwworm came with them. And now they're knocking practically at the southern border. And once again, it is likely the deer and cattle in the southern part of the United States are going to be infected. And if we can't stop it there, it moves across the country as it did almost a century ago. We have a lot of tools today that we didn't have a century ago. But the problem is that once the gap was breached down at the Darien Gap in Panama, where it's only a 100-mile wide barrier, now we got a 2,000-mile U.S.-Mexican border that we have to address. And in talking with the cattle industry and the outdoor groups, and the reason this is the focus of the Great Outdoor Show is deer are intensely affected by these absolutely horrible worms. So we're going to see what happens, but there's about to be, I think, major announcements made that we're going to reactivate the screw worm sterilization program, put planes and drones back in the air and work with Mexico to knock them out before they get to the United States. We'll see what happens. That is the last story from Washington that I've got. But when I come back, I'm going to talk about what is a simply bizarre story in science. And that is the story of sea ice. You'll love it. Thanks for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of America and Chicago, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go, worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. And the next few minutes, it's like science into the future. And I'm not sure I like it. And when I'm through with it, I'm not sure you're going to like it either. You know that old saying, don't fool Mother Nature. Well, we're trying to fool Mother Nature in many ways with emerging technology. And one of them is this, well, there's several I'm going to talk about in the next few minutes, but this one to me is one of the most bizarre. We're going to try to refreeze the Arctic Ocean. We are going to literally try to pump Arctic Ocean water back up on the ice so that it refreezes and expands the polar ice caps. I'm not making this up. This is actually taking place right now. There's a test company out of the UK called United Kingdom called a company is called Real Ice. And they are setting up a test plot in the Arctic to try to recreate thicker ice. So this is a story that, you know, when you first read about it, you just say, no, that's not, they're not really doing that. No, they actually really are doing this. So let me take you back in history a little bit. Of course, the polar ice caps have been shrinking for a long time, but after World War II, in the 1950s, the U.S. military team set up radar stations to detect Soviet bombers coming over the poles. The Cold War led to the idea of how can we melt polar ice for transportation for military. The USSR then discussed destroying the sea ice with coal dust and explosions, and they actually detonated 3 nuclear devices to try to excavate an Arctic canal. The United States, under the physicist Edward Teller's project Plowshare, nearly got congressional approval, and this is true, nearly got congressional approval to make a harbor in Alaska using atomic bombs. I'm not making this up. That's 1950s, because there was so much sea ice. Today, we're worried about the sea ice being taken out entirely. So we have this industry called geoengineering, and it's intended to cool the Earth off, to fend off climate change. And scientists and entrepreneurs behind them are focused on a number of ways to do this. Some of them are dispersing sulfate particles to the stratosphere to block sunlight. This would lessen heating, but it also would disrupt global weather patterns, such as the South Asian monsoon. Mexico recently announced that it's finally putting a ban on the solar geoengineering project after Silicon Valley startup Make Sunsets. What a great name. Make Sunsets, and we're going to pound the Earth with sulfate particles. Launch 2 balloons full of sulfate dioxide in Mexico. Mexico said no more. The city of Alameda, California halted an experiment to spray sea salt particles towards the sky to make clouds more reflective. They stopped that too. Field trials targeting the Arctic, though, and the Antarctic and the third pole of colossal glaciers in the Himalayas have stirred up a lot less controversy, and that's because there are a lot fewer people around. But the unintended consequences of these are just as big. China has blown chemical smoke into the clouds with rockets and planes, drones, to provide snowfall over glaciers on the Tibetan Plateau. This is stuff we don't read about. We think, you know, and we are tinkering around the world with our climate. Scandinavia is developing giant curtains that could be anchored to the seabed, the bottom of the ocean, to block warm water from melting the undersides of ice shelves in the Antarctic. billions of dollars would be needed to affect this. I hope they don't get the first dollar. Can you imagine putting a curtain on the bottom of the ocean to stop the warm currents from flowing? Suppose we did that. Oh, let's say we did that off of Florida and we interrupted the Gulf Current and we actually cooled the climate, which we sure would do if we stopped the warm water moving of the Gulf Current. England and Ireland and the whole all of Europe would go into an ice age. We cannot possibly think that we're serious about messing around with high-tech science to try to change the climate. But we're trying. And the thicker the sea ice gets, of course, back in the Arctic, the slower it melts. But the problem is that when they're pumping water up from the bottom of the Arctic Ocean and they're putting it on the ice, of course, that's salt water. Salt water, what does it do? It melts the snow. What does snow do? Snow is the number one reflectant to reflect the sun's warmth back up into the atmosphere. So on one hand, they're trying to expand the ice caps. And for all of you engineers and physicists listening, I am neither. They're trying to expand the ice caps by growing more ice on the surface. But that ice they're growing on the surface is laden with salt water, which causes the snow to melt when it falls on the ice. And therefore, you actually have less reflection. So this is what is taking place. And I think we only can say it's taking place by the mad scientists. And I, for one, and think you would hopefully agree, we better be careful. Whether we're blowing smoke to try to turn ice crystals to try to reflect the sun, whether we're pumping sea ice, whether we're doing things with wind, whatever we're trying to do to change the Earth's climate is going to have a counter effect. It's a boomerang. Whatever you do one thing, you drop big curtains to the bottom of the ocean to try to change the ocean currents, and you're going to change the ocean's currents, and that's going to have a counter effect somewhere else. So back what I said a moment ago, probably best not to mess with Mother Nature. The climate's evolving. We're going to evolve. We're going to try to do things to reduce our impact on the environment. But let's not try to directly change the climate ourselves. It could well backfire. And there are unintended consequences in all of this. So the venture money is out because they think they're big gains. The scientists are out doing this because they're incredible breakthroughs. And as I leave the sea ice discussion, what's going to happen when they want to put literally 100,000 drones up over the Arctic to drill to fly over and to power these drills that are going to go down into the ocean? Where's all the energy going to come from to run these pumps? I think we know where it's going to come from. Thanks so much for listening. Hope you have a great week in the great outdoors and enjoy the first week in June. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.